man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, can I switch it on? You find
please.
It in the picture? And
you please.
Okay. There we go.
Okay, good morning everyone. Today we are learning Parshas Bechukosai. It is the last Parsha of the book of Vayikra. And the majority of the Parsha deals with the consequences of our Jewish behavior. And the Torah begins with the words, Im Bechukosai Teilechu Ves Mitzvosai Tishmoro Vasisa Masam. If you will follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them, then the Torah goes on and lists all the amazing blessings that will happen. The rains will come on time. The land will give its produce. You'll have tremendous financial success. You'll dwell securely in the land. You won't be afraid of your enemies. You'll be victorious in battle. I will turn my attention to you. I'll make you fruitful and increase you. I will establish my covenant with you. Amazing things. I mean, just great. But if you don't listen to my words and don't do, then all kinds of Holocaust-like predictions are written clearly in the Torah. It's like black and white. There's nothing left to the imagination. Almost 30 plus verses discussing the chain of events of things getting worse to worse to worse to worse to worse to worse. And again, if anybody asks you where was God in the Holocaust, I'm not going to go that way today. He was right here in Parshas Bechukosai. Said it straight and out, and people who are ignorant of the Torah ask those questions. But that's not where we're going today. But that is the bulk of this Parsha. But we're going to focus on the beginning, the positive part. And the words I'm going to tell you are basically all from the Shemi Shmuel, from different places in his commentary in the Chumash, Sakachova Revi. And we're going to analyze just the first pasuk, just the first verse, as the rabbis explain it. It says, "V'im b'chukosai teilechu," if you will go, teilech, you will walk, you will follow my chukim, my decrees, ves mitzvosai tishmeru, and you will keep my mitzvos, vasisa mosom, and you will do them. So, again, we should just, so the first pasuk, so why does it use the word teilechu? V'im b'chukosai teilechu, if you will walk in my chukos. Why doesn't it say, as it says later on, if you will do my chukos, if you will do my decrees, right? Why to express the performance of chukim as walking, as moving, telech? That's the first question that we'll see. Rashi will touch on that. And also, it seems there's a great significance to this chukim idea as opposed to other things. Now, just to review, there's three types of expressions we use in the Torah. There's something called mitzvos, something called mishpatim, and something called chukim. So mitzvos, when you say the word mitzvos, it refers to mitzvos that deal with our worship between ourselves and Hashem. Keeping Shabbos, kashrus, between me and Hashem. Usually when you use the word mitzvah, generally it means mitzvah between you and Hashem. Mishpatim are usually laws that are between man and man that are logical. If you damage someone, you gotta pay back. That's logical. Laws of jurisprudence, keeping kosher, I'd never be able to think that, you know. See, me and Hashem is a certain area of realm of law. Another law, what Hashem has to deal with people. Okay, honoring your parents, I could figure that one out. But then there's a third group called chukim. A chok. A chok means something that's not logical. Something we cannot comprehend. We have no idea why God gave us such a mitzvah. You know, it just doesn't, if you were making up religions, that's the last thing you'd think about. You know, to put black boxes on your head and on your arm, you know, I can't understand that. I can't understand why if I have some wool and linen mixed together, that I can't wear that. What's bothering anybody? I'm not even ingesting it. Okay, conscience, you say maybe it's something, God doesn't want me to do something in my body. Okay, this is on top of your body. Right? Parah Aduma, the red heifer. That the person who's involved in making the person pure becomes impure while the impure guy becomes pure. These things just don't make any sense. Those are called chukim. And the Torah is saying, Im bechukosai teilechu, if you will walk in my chukim, and then the next steps, and that's the name of the parsha, bechukosai, that means to be the critical first step, is extremely significant. So why is that so significant? What about if I do my mitzvahs? Why do we start by, if you do my mitzvahs? That's critical. So the two questions we're asking is, what's the idea of walking or going in a chok? It should say doing. And also, like, why the chukim beyond anything else? But let's move on. The Torah then mentions all the amazing blessings that will happen. Now, there's a major problem with that, and that's the very first source you have. The Gemara in Kiddushin, Rabbi Yaakov said, "Schar b'hai al malekah." There's no such thing as a reward for a mitzvah in this world. There's no such thing. In other words, if you do a mitzvah, you cannot be rewarded for it in a physical way as a true payment for the mitzvah which you do, because a mitzvah is a spiritual uplifting experience, and its performance deserves measure for measure a spiritual reward. All right, spiritual rewards cannot contain themselves, you know, sufficiently in physical blessings. You did something, a mitzvah is a spiritual thing, so the reward has to be spiritual. Something physical can't be. Let me get a simple analogy to understand this idea. Let's say a person is carrying around a $1 million bill. If they would make such a bill. He's got a $1 million bill. He's walking through the desert. He's thirsty. He really would like to drink something. He walks by, there happens to be a Coke kiosk in the middle of the desert. And he's mamish thirsty. So he says to the guy, "How much is the Coke?" The guy says, $2. It's not bad for a desert. $2 for a Coke. That's pretty good. He says, "Okay, here, you got change for $1 million? He says, "No, we don't carry any change." So what am I supposed to do? Well, either you give me the $1 million or you don't drink it. Well, a foolish person would say, "Here, take the $1 million, right? He drinks the Coke, he feels good. Then when he gets to civilization, man, there was $1 million he could have used that he just gave away for a Coke. So the same thing, when you do a mitzvah of Hashem, you know, the currency of reward, you know, is so amazing, you know, it's such a spiritually contained reality. If you want it, you know, to get, you can't pay it. There's no rate of exchange here. It's like getting a Coke for $1 million. So Hashem said, do you want me to give you a Coke for $1 million? Do you want to waste it all on that? You just can't. That's what it means. Schar b'hai al malekah. There's no such thing as the reward for mitzvah in this world. It's just not possible for that to happen. So all the commentators ask, well, if that's the case, and that's a rule we have, this parsha seems to go against that rule. The parsha says, if you do the mitzvah, here's the reward. Finish. If anything, this is the proof of the opposite. God does give you rewards in this world. If you do my mitzvahs, all kinds of physical blessings. And the reverse as well. We don't want to go there. Obviously, if you do an avera, it should be spiritual punishments. But here we're seeing it's physical punishments as well. So there's a number of answers that the rabbis give. One potential answer that is given is that, you know, just like when you go to a fancy meal, you know, first you walk in and they give you the vorspeise, they give you the hors d'oeuvres, which are nice. But of course, you didn't come for the hors d'oeuvres. You came for the steak. You came for the main dish. So the same thing, that what God is promising you is just the vorspeise. He's promising the hors d'oeuvres. The main thing, that's in the world to come. That's the main thing. So that's one answer they give, but that's a problem because we never get to the main thing. The Torah is not mentioning the main thing. It just says, talks about the hors d'oeuvres. It's kind of unusual. If you do the mitzvah, this is what you get, hors d'oeuvres. So say something about the main dish. The Rambam gives another answer. He says that there's no way a human being cannot comprehend what the reward is. So these blessings mean that the fact that you did a mitzvah, you know, God will do for you if you do a mitzvah, Hashem will allow the environment you live in to allow you to continue to do mitzvahs. In other words, if you're a person who gives tzedakah, so the reward for tzedakah, that's in the next world. Forget it. You can't get any reward in this world for it. But what Hashem does, since He sees you doing mitzvahs, and He wants a reward in the next world, so He'll give you physical blessings that aren't a reward for the mitzvah, but will enable you to continue to do more mitzvahs. The fact that you give tzedakah, Hashem will give you more money. Why? That's not a reward. That's not a reward. It's just enable you to continue to do more mitzvahs. That's all. Since I see you like to do mitzvahs, I let you be able to do more mitzvahs. I'm not going to make you go flat broke. Now you can't do the mitzvah anymore. But the reward, that's not a reward. That's just the wherewithal to continue to do mitzvahs. And that's all the Torah is telling you. It's the wherewithal to continue to do mitzvahs. That's a second answer. A third answer, the Shaloh HaKadosh, says like this. The Torah is telling you spiritual rewards. Right? When it says rain, it's not talking about physical rain. When it says the land will give you fruits, these are symbolisms, allegories of spiritual things. We just don't have the brains and the capability to translate it into mystical ways. We don't understand what it really means. So the Torah is using physical allegories that are hinting to very deep spiritual rewards. And therefore, that's a great thing. That's a great way to express it. So anybody who's a Kabbalist, who learns the Torah, he knows everything, he'll know exactly what the spiritual rewards are. And the simple ones like us, who don't know any Kabbalah, but we don't want to think we're getting nothing, so here we hear rain, we hear the land is good, so we walk away saying, well, that's still very nice, we're getting rewards. We should know whatever is written is only a symbolism of a real deep spiritual thing. So the rain isn't really rain, the land isn't really land, it's expressions. And that's the three most common answers that you have to this question. There's a lot more, but that's enough for now. And for example, to just give you some examples of what that means, you can look in the second source to Rashi's, where again, you see Rashi himself is giving you symbolisms. In the second source, it says, Hashem says, well, part of the reward is, v'hi salachti b'socham, I will walk amongst you. What does that mean, Hashem will walk amongst you? So Rashi says, I will stroll with you in the Garden of Eden. Like one of you. So you already see, you know, we're not in the Garden of Eden yet. So when it says, I will stroll with you, so it means something much more spiritual in the Garden of Eden. Right? And like one of you. And not only that, but you will not tremble because of me. You won't even be afraid. And you might be able to think that you won't even fear me. So he says, no, you will fear me, but you're not going to be trembling like crazy. And really, it's all based on a medrash, where the medrash gives an analogy to a king who's walking with a sharecropper into the field, and the sharecropper, he's trembling, and the king says, what are you afraid of? He says, you're the king. Shouldn't I not tremble? And the king says, listen, we're equal. Don't worry. Don't be afraid. So, in other words, you'll feel comfortable. You'll feel as comfortable like a friend of Hashem in Gan Eden. So that's what he's saying. So that's an example of, you know, write simple words, but it's much deeper concepts behind this. Okay. Now, of course, the Torah goes on in the blessings, and it says a very interesting clause that after all the great blessings, I will walk with you, I will this, I will that. Then the Torah says at the end of Pasuk Yud Aleph, even though it says all these amazing things, I will place my sanctuary amongst you, but then it says an interesting line. It says, "Velo sigal nafshi eschem," I will not be disgusted with you. So where does that fit into the blessings? Usually you say that if you're going to punish somebody, I'm going to punish you, I'm going to hit you, I'm that, but I won't be disgusted with you. Here you're saying, I'm going to bless you, I'm going to this, we're going to walk together, get Aiden, and I won't be disgusted with you. So where does that figure in? You know, is this the best blessing God can give us? Like, someone's coming to the end, he's listing a whole bunch of blessings, and he said, I won't be disgusted with you either. What does that mean? That's something that needs some explanation. Okay. Now, there is a very famous midrash over here, the fifth source, the fourth source over here. The midrash is troubled with the word, Bichu kosai te lechu, you will walk, go in my chukim. So the midrash says the following, and you could look at it inside. I'm going to just paraphrase it. There's really two midrashim. It's midrash number 5, source number 5, and source number 4. So we'll start with number 5, and then we'll go to number 4. Number 5 says, it's not talking about chukim, shatness, and those kind of chukim. We're not talking about decrees you can't understand. There's another kind of decree. It's called the decree of the world. In other words, the natural way of the world, the way God decreed the world to be. If you'll walk within the orders, the decrees of nature, you know, like for heaven and earth, then everything will be fine. So in other words, if you will walk within the orders of the universe, there's an order of the universe, there's rules of the universe. If you walk in the rules of the universe, right, then everything will be fine. So the question is, what is that supposed to mean? What does that mean? Why does the Midrash deviate from the simple interpretation? Right. So that's we have to understand. But the one we're going to spend most time on is the fourth source. Fourth source, the Medrash gives four interpretations to this idea of going with the chukim. And the Medrash is telling us, we're talking about King David. And when King David said, the pasuk, I considered my ways and turned my feet unto your testimonies. The Medrash gives four interpretations. Number one is, David said, Sovereign universe, every day I used to plan and decide that I would go to a particular place or a particular dwelling house, but my feet always brought me to the synagogues and the houses of study. Therefore it says, and I turned my feet unto your testimonies. So King David said, no, you know, whatever my plans were, I always ended up coming to the shul. Whatever my plans were, I always ended up going to the study hall. And that's what it means, b'chukosai telecho, telecho. I always wound up walking in where you wanted me to walk. In your statutes, in your laws, I ended up going to your place, not to my place. That's the first interpretation. Second interpretation rabbis give is, he said, King David said, you know, I calculated the reward of mitzvahs, the reward given for doing mitzvahs. I calculated the loss of doing an avera. And after all that thinking, I always ended up in the right place. Third interpretation, I looked at what you wrote in the Torah in this week's Parsha about the blessings that happened to you if you listened to God and about the curses, and I ended up in the right place. All these ideas, you know, Teilecho, I always ended up going in the right place. And the fourth one, he says, I looked at all the blessings. The blessings start from the letter Aleph to the letter Tav, going through the whole alphabet. I looked at the curses. The curses go from the letter Vav to the letter He. So I considered, well, blessings are Aleph from Tav, from beginning to end. Vav to He is just one next to the other. And I go backwards, so I don't really see much to the curses, and I don't want to get involved in the curses, so I'd rather be with the blessings, and I ended up over there. So these are all difficult. Every line is more difficult than the next. You know, after all these explanations, how does it help me understand the simple text, Im b'chukosai telech, you go my paths? How does the Midrashim help us understand the message of the parshas here? Some of them just don't even make any sense. Okay, so to understand all this, the next period of time, next 20 minutes or so, is going to be the very hard part of the class. I'm going to tell you a fundamental principle in Judaism that you can't argue on, but it's very, very hard to accept. Okay? So just get your mind prepared for that. In the days of the Talmud, whenever a rabbi had to tell a student something his heart to understand, he'd make him do some servant's work for him first. Once a rabbi, how did you know this law? He says, you know, do me a favor, take my towel and take it over there for me, please. And then after he took it, then he gave him an answer that was really hard to understand. Right? So, not that I'm going to ask you to do any slave work over here. But I'm saying you've got to really think hard and you've got to be able to expand a little bit. Because the ideas, you'll see everything that I'm going to say, you'll see why you won't understand what I'm saying. So now why am I coming to the class, right? You'll see. So let's turn the page, and on the sixth page, we now get the explanation of Rashi. It says, "Im b'chukosai telechu, if you will go in my chukim, ves mitzvosai tishmeru, and you will keep my mitzvos, vasizma, you'll do them." So Rashi says, on the words, "Im b'chukosai telechu," so yochol, I might think, what does that first clause mean? Zekiu mitzvos, that means keeping the mitzvos. That's what you might think it means. But then right afterwards it says, Ves mitzvosai tishmeru, you'll observe my mitzvahs. Vasisam, you'll perform them. So the second and third clause already say you're going to do the mitzvahs. So what's the first clause mean? If the second clause says, you will watch my mitzvahs. And then it says, and you will do my mitzvahs. So now what could the first clause mean? Could it mean doing mitzvahs? Already said in the second and third clause, you'll do mitzvahs. So what does it mean? B'chukosai telech. What does those words mean? You will walk in my chukim. The second and third clause say, you will guard my mitzvahs and do my mitzvahs. So what could it mean? So he says, what do I maintain? Im b'chukosai telecho, shetiyu amelim batorah. The interpretation of the words, im b'chukosai telecho, those three words mean, you will toil and work very hard to understand the Torah that you learn. That's what it means. You're going to work very hard to understand the Torah that you're learning. That's what im b'chukosai telechu means. We'll use a Yiddish expression. You have to schwitz in Torah learning. Imagine any difficult task you did in your life that took a lot of effort. cramming for your medical boards, okay, whatever, big final exams, and you mamish went without sleep for days and days. Let's say you had a business deal and you had to get an order ready and none of the workers showed up one day and you had to do the whole order by yourself and you couldn't sleep for 3 days till you got it done. So when we're talking about learning Torah, we're talking about the same thing. It's to push and push and push and work and work and work. Right? In other words, if you go to a class and it's handed over to you on a silver platter, you might be learning. And if you do a mitzvah, it might be vasisim, and you do it. But if you have not performed the mental control of sitting down and figuring out a difficult concept, figuring out the question, thinking of an answer, refuting the answer, comparing that answer to a different answer, bringing in different concepts, analyzing, groping, struggling, and then finally coming out with an answer, then you're missing something very important. That's what the Torah is saying. Now, as educators, anyone who's an educator, it would seem what the Torah is saying is contradictory to the educational system. Normally, the way we look at it in a school, if the teacher's good, you know how you know the teacher's good? The student walks out understanding everything. And more than that, they didn't even have to think very hard, and they understood it. That's a real good teacher. Right? If, on the other hand, the kid walks out of the class, he doesn't understand it, it means the teacher wasn't good. At the end of the day, it all depends on, and this has been the great issue of Sesame Street learning. Make learning fun. Learning has to be fun. If learning is fun, kids will learn more. That was the theory of the Sesame Street experience. So what Rashi is saying seems to be contrary to what the best way of educating people are. Rashi is saying that the greatest experience in learning is engaging the person's mind where there's questions and where the person gets stumped and he can't figure it out. And he spends hours and hours and hours trying to get the concepts together. And at the end of the day, hopefully he gets it. And maybe at the end of the day, he doesn't get it. And that's what has to happen. That's what the Torah is saying. Now, first of all, that's hard for many people to just understand that idea, which we'll have to explain. But also, if you're talking about working hard at something, if you have different aspects of mitzvahs, remember we said there's mishpatim, those are laws that make sense. Chukim are laws that don't make sense, right? So where would you say it makes sense to say you should toil and give effort to in which kinds of mitzvahs? The ones that make sense, because at least after all the struggling, you'll finally get some sense out of it. Just because they make sense doesn't mean it's easy to make sense, but after you struggle, you come to the sense. But if it's a choke, if it's a mystery, you can't understand, well, I can't understand it anyway, no matter how much time I spend on it. So why apply it to that? Just like King Solomon said, he was the smartest guy, I can't figure out Parah Aduma, I can't figure it out. So why are you telling me to be toiling and making efforts to something that I can't understand? They should have said, you know, toil in mishpatim, in laws that make sense, and then go work hard, try to figure them out. Chukim, I'm not going to figure them out no matter what. It still makes sense if anywhere to struggle to try to get something and to come out with an answer should be something where you have an answer. A mishpat means, here's the mitzvah, and this is the reason for it. Some reasons may be easy, some reasons may be hard. It's hard, so work on it more until you get it. Now you'll get it. It's a mishpat. It's a mitzvah to understand. A chok is a mitzvah you'll never understand. You'll never understand it, so why am I spending time trying to figure it out? That is a big question. So the answer is like this, and this is what we're going to spend the bulk of the class trying to understand this answer, which probably won't understand. This is a fundamental principle now. He says, the very fact that the way that the Torah is set up is that the human being only develops through a tremendous amount of analysis. And that's the only way it will work. The fact that there's no 10 steps to Yiddishkeit. Easy Judaism in 1 hour. Right? As this past year on the internet, they were introducing the half-hour Seder. You know, you can get a meaningful Seder in a half an hour. The whole idea of people saying, you know, give it to me in a way that I can get it and digest it in a logical, simple way. To which the Torah says, no, that is not the way that Torah is meant to be learned. The Torah is meant to be learned with extreme struggle, with extreme difficulty. And everything you learn has to come hard, cannot come easy. And you're going to look at it and you're going to have a million questions and you're not going to understand it. And if you answer one question, then another four questions pop up. And then you answer those, more questions come up. And you're working very, it might take you 10 hours till you get it. Right? That is a law of the basic first step of Judaism. That law itself is a chok, is a not understandable concept. That is the chok. We're not talking about the red heifer. I don't understand the red heifer. We're not talking about shatness. I don't understand shatness. You know what we don't understand? We don't understand what the Torah is telling us. This is the chok. The chok of Torah is that you got to work hard till you get the Torah. And if you get it easy, that's not Torah. And you ask any educator, they'll say, you don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about? Make it with nice charts and diagrams and pictures and this and that. So it'll be like butter. It'll be like on a silver spoon. Let it come easy to them. It'll be enjoyable. It'll be fun. And the Torah is saying, no, you have to be amelim batorah. You have to work hard in Torah. It's got to come with a lot of sweat and toil and effort. And 10 times you think you're going to give it up and you're not going to get it. Until you finally get it. Sweat and toil and tears and effort. And that kind of Torah that comes in, that will ultimately be the source of all blessings in this world. That's step one. We're starting off the parsha. Okay, you know, we have finished three big books of the Torah now. By this point in time, we really know most of the Torah you need to know. The next two books, really, I don't want to minimize them, God forbid. If you know the first three books, you're pretty good. Because if you learned, you know, like 95% of what you got to know in Judaism, it's all there already. We know about korbanos, all the animal offerings. You know about all the mitzvahs between man and man. You know all the chukim. Just about everything. A few more little things when you go to Eretz Yisrael, we'll tell you a couple more things. But the basics of Judaism, you're done. And really, in all intents and purposes, a lot of the rest of the Torah would not have need to have been written had the Jews not messed up. So really coming to the, in a certain way, the end of the third book, on a certain level, is we basically are finished with the Torah. If you don't mess up, Jews, we only needed another two parshas, we'd be done. We're basically done with the laws. So now we're coming to the end. So, okay, the bottom line is, look at this whole beautiful Torah. Now, we're talking about blessings. We're talking about curses. You want to live in a blessed state? Step one is to understand the mitzvahs and do the mitzvahs. Step one is work hard to try to understand what is going on. That is step one of the whole process. And if you walk in and you just get, it just comes in easy, you've missed step one already. That concept is a chok. That is the chok. Im b'chukosai teilechu. That's what Rashi is saying, and this, you'll see in a minute, it's not far off base pshat, that's pasha pshat. If you go with me with the chok of learning Torah, and you could say, well, I don't understand, what do you tell me? Okay, you want me to stay busy, stay out of trouble. Well, you know, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, good is Talmud Torah with work, because the two of them keeps you away from sin. Well, let's think of other ways to keep away a person from sin, right? But, you know, so what's the idea? The idea, it's a very hidden idea, right? But what the Torah is saying, the key element in spiritual development through Torah does not come from the information alone that you get from the Torah. That's not what's going to change your life. The information is not going to change your life. What is it? It's the process of how you got the information that is going to change your life. It's not the product of Torah, it's the process of Torah. You say, well, just Give me all the laws. Tell me all the mitzvahs. Tell me why I got to do them. Make it easy. Self-study course online, and I'll get it. You tell me what to do, and I'll do what I got to do, and that's it. But the answer is Hashem is not looking for a person to become an Encyclopedia Britannica of Torah, or now a Wikipedia of Torah, whatever you call it, right? That's not what Hashem's looking for. He's looking for someone to become a scholar that toils and troubles with researching and trying to analyze it and make sense of it. And that is called Amal BaTorah, toiling in Torah. The growth in Judaism doesn't come alone from the knowledge. It comes from how you got the knowledge. And I'm telling you, you ask educators, they will not accept this. Just tell me what to do. Make it easy. Make it easy. Just tell me step one, step two, step three, and that's it. So when the Torah says, Im b'chukosai teilechu, isn't referring to the mitzvahs that we think, shat, it's a mitzvah we don't understand. It means if you go in the chok of the Torah, in the law of the Torah, of how you learn Torah, that we don't understand necessarily why it is so, but it is that way. And to the degree that we work hard to understand and labor through the Torah, we develop much more spiritually just by the experience of sweating out to trying to understand something. That is what it's saying. So it can come out. Two people can go into the study hall and learn. One's a genius and one's average. They both come out at the end of the day, they figure out the explanation of the Gemara. One guy took him 3 hours to figure out. The other guy took him 15 minutes to work it out. At the end of the day, you ask him the test. They both know the information the same. Who is of a higher spiritual character will be the fellow who took 3 hours to figure it out and not the guy that took 15 minutes. Doesn't mean to say the brilliant people are doomed to not toil because you could just give them higher level things that are harder for them to figure out. You know, with this is the chok of the Torah. Why is it that that's what we got to do it? That's the chok. That's the chok. You know, even though we can't understand why it has to be a way, but at least we can analyze the benefits that come out of it. There are benefits, and that's what the Medrash is going to start talking about, which we're going to get into in a minute. There are benefits to this. The why is not easily understandable, although we'll try hopefully before the class is over to give you a little bit of the why. Why do you keep kosher? Because God said so. Well, you know, there are benefits to that. And we could explain some of the benefits of keeping kosher. I think we did it in one alternative class. You know, if you keep kosher, you're able to understand Torah better. There's a certain tumah that doesn't exist. Those are the benefits. But why it has to be, well, we don't know the whys. But we could tell you the benefits over here. This is why we can, I was just thinking something, I just forgot it. That's why the Yetzer Hara, when you learn, what is the first thing the Yetzer Hara is going to tell you to do when you're learning? Learn something that's easy. I want you to learn. You're going to learn. For sure you're going to learn. So take an English book off the shelf. You know, it gives you all the laws of Shabbat. This is a very easy book. You learn this, it'd be very easy. Take something that's harder. I don't want to do something that's harder. So you say, so what's the difference? I'm learning Torah for an hour. So I learned the whole hour. I looked at the English book. I like to learn the stories in the stories in the Bible. Now that I really like. I like the stories. That's fun. That's entertaining and that's easy. And I'm going to learn that for an hour. Well, the other guy opens up a Talmud and he's spending a whole hour trying to figure out one line. Trying to figure out one line. At the end of the hour, he might know the one line. And the other guy read 150 pages in a book. So it's not a question one guy has more information than the other. We'll see the benefits are, there's a totally two different people you're talking to. Why does it have to be that way? That's the chok of the Torah. That's the way it is. That's the way God made it. You can get the product, but the process can never be substituted. That's such a fundamental idea that I would say most Jews don't know about this idea and certainly resist this idea. But now you understand why young men have to spend years studying in a yeshiva. Because what are they supposed to be doing in the yeshiva? They're learning what it means to toil in the Torah. You have to be able to be a person who can sit in front of a Talmud, you know, like This idea is stranger. When I first came across this idea 20 years ago, even now it's more strange for people to accept. Because, you know, how many people can even do one task for more than 5 minutes? Analyze when you do something in a day. Really think, are you focused to the task for how long? Any task you do, without at the slightest deviation. You know, you're working on a project in front of your computer, and as soon as an email comes, you go right to the email. Just look at something and not anything else, and look at it. Try to look at it even for 10 minutes without, looking out the window for a minute. I think I'll have to get a coffee. I'll have to do this or that. Just for 10 minutes, focus on something and concentrate on one idea. And I'm not talking about, I can read a book for 5 hours. No, that's different ideas coming. Focus on one idea and focus on that for 10, 15, 20 minutes so you really understand it. We just don't know how to do that anymore. That's why a young man has to go to yeshiva to learn how to do that. But what's so important? Because everything depends on it. This is not just a trapping here. This is the chok. It's not a trapping. Well, you know, if you don't do it, you're also a very good Jew and everything's going to be fine. And if I do it, I'm a little better. I'm sorry, I wish I could tell you that, but I can't. You know why? Because the second half of the parsha says, and if you don't go in God's chukim, what does that mean? It means if you don't toil and work hard to understand the Torah, it means you are learning Sesame Street Torah. What do you mean? I was learning Torah. You were. You really were learning Torah, but it was Sesame Street Torah. Then all of a sudden it shows you, I don't have time, the slippery slope of digression. Where first, you know, yeah, you weren't working hard to learn Torah, and then you start skimping on the mitzvahs, and then you start not doing the mitzvahs, and then you start ridiculing people who do mitzvahs, and then you come finally to denying God. What do you mean? I was learning Sesame Street Torah. If you start with Sesame Street Torah, the process isn't good. Ultimately, you're not going to keep anything. So that's why this is not a small little trapping. You know, and that's why, you know, children have to be trained that life is not easy. That's why, for all the virtues, that Sesame Street is amazing for non-Jews who don't have to do this. Non-Jews have no mitzvah to toil in learning their seven Noahide laws. So good, let them learn Sesame Street. The destruction of Sesame Street, I'm talking about, there's no immorality in it. So how could it be harmless? Because it's training children that learning has to be easy. You don't understand it. Only great rabbis understood this when it was coming out, when television was coming, all these things. Forget, we're not talking about immorality, we're not talking about any of that. We're just talking about, you know, even secular people understand how it destroys your mind. Forget it. Just, you know, we're not producing geniuses anymore in North America because we're trained to not work hard on our minds. So they're worrying about, you know, if we make inventions and this and that. But in Judaism, it's much worse. We're talking about the process of learning is the first step in the spiritual development of the person. And if in the process you're taught that it has to come easy, then you've missed that whole first process. So now if the kid watches Sesame Street for 3-4 years, now he has to go and learn something that's hard. What do the kids always say? It's too hard. And okay, all the mothers and fathers who don't want to make their children have to sweat one sweat. Okay, there must be something wrong with the teachers. No, the learning has to be hard. I don't think my kid can handle the double curriculum. That's the thing. He's got to sweat hard. Well, he can't do that and also play hockey and this and that and everything else. Yeah, that's right. So yeah, he's got to come home from school with a headache. You're right. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way the educational system is supposed to be. But that's, well, do you eat a pig? No. Why not? That's the way it's supposed to be. Do you eat shotness? You rare shotness? No. Why? I don't understand. That's what God said. Learning has to come hard. We're not saying that teachers should be incompetent. No, you have to have a good teacher. But the material is hard. It has to be presented in a way that the child has enough information that he's now asking so many questions on his own that he doesn't know if things are coming and going. It's hard because he knows so much, and a smart Rebbe presents in a way that the kid, it's not coming easy, but if he'll work hard enough, then he'll be able to uncover what it is and make the kid sweat it out. No, give them the Gemara, let them figure it out on his own. But why don't you use Arch Cole English translation? It'll be so much easier. No, you gotta break your head to get it. You know, let's have an expanded Arch Cole. Everything's written in English. Everything's explained clearly. So what have you done? You've taken the guts of the person out of the learning process. And the Torah is saying, this is the chok of the Torah. This is the rule. Now, let me ask you, y'all happy with that rule? None of you are happy with this rule. Right? So, 20 years ago, were you happy with kashrus? Were you happy with shatness? Happy with all those other crazy rules God made? Right? But this one's even harder. It's the hardest of all the chulin because it's now forcing you to learn in a way that you don't want to learn. That's what it's doing. And that's the chok. And you could see why some people would reject this. And therefore, the Medrash is saying that there's many benefits to it. And that's the four different opinions of the Medrash are saying you should know if a person learns this way, you will find many, many benefits that happen. So let's go over the first. Well, I don't know if I have time to go through everything, but I want to get to the idea. The first thing is King David said that, you know, I had a lot of places to go. I thought I was going to go here, I thought I was going to go there, and I always ended up in the shul, I always ended up in the base medrash. So what that means is that when a person toils in the Torah, one of the benefits is that you're removing yourself from physical desire, from the physical realms, and it immediately transforms you into the realms that have more spiritual values. So if you accept the value of working at it in and of itself, then God, He guarantees, Ushmartem vasisem osam, that you will do them. In other words, the Torah is giving you the very first prescription. The Torah is saying, you know, there's a lot of people in the world who learn Torah and they still don't want to do what it says in the Torah. You know that? And if they do, they want to do it the minimum way. You learn about Shabbos, yeah, and still don't want to keep Shabbos. You learn about Shabbos, and then you say, okay, but give me the minimum amount I have to do for Shabbos. You know, so the Torah is saying that, you know, you ever have a time? I'm not in the mood to the mitzvah. But it says that in the, you learned it. We served it you on a silver platter. You have to get up and daven in a minyan. It's on a silver platter. It was explained. It was very clear. And I understand, so I still want to do it. I don't want to do it. Right? So, if you're working at it hard, what'll happen is, you will now be pulled into a spiritual zone in which you will not find doing the mitzvahs so unbearable. Is that a benefit or not a benefit? Right? And that's what the rabbi said. So what it seems we're giving the reward. What is the reward? He's saying, you know what the basic reward is? Im b'chukosai teilechu, the reward for toiling and understanding is as mitzvosai tishmeru. First of all, you really will understand those mitzvahs. Vasisam osam, and you will do them. As it says in Pirkei Avos, schar mitzvah, mitzvah. Source 7, the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. What does that mean? The reward of the mitzvah of learning Torah, the way you're supposed to be learning it, the reward is that you will now want to do the other mitzvahs. And as in Pirkei Avos, it says the next source, that more beautiful is 1 hour spent in tshuva and good deeds in this world more than all the pleasure of the world to come. He says you will do a mitzvah in this world and you will enjoy it like the world to come, even better than the world to come. Because you'll be so in sync, so in touch with the mitzvah. So, we gave a number of answers. What do you mean? There is no such reward for mitzvahs in this world. Right? How can you get a reward for mitzvahs in the world? So we gave all kinds of answers. But now, the question is answered in this most simplistic way. You can get a reward for a mitzvah in this world. You know what the reward is? That you really like doing mitzvahs. You don't say, I'm not in the mood. The reward for toiling and working hard at Torah means that once you've got it, you've got it. And then it's never such a thing, I'm not in the mood to doing the mitzvah anymore. If the reward is, as mitzvosai tishmeru, you will understand the mitzvahs, you'll be in sync with the mitzvahs, vasisam some, you'll do them, and then, of course, then there could always be, even if you want to do mitzvahs, then physical things and circumstances can prevent you, then the rest of the parsha, and nothing will prevent you from doing because you really want to do it. Isn't that, don't you think that's the greatest reward you could ever have? You know, you learn Torah, but you don't want to do what it says. Doesn't anybody ever feel that way anytime? You know, you learn Torah, you have to daven in a minyan. The minyan's early in the morning. I don't want to get up so early. I don't want to go to a minyan. But wouldn't it be great if when you learn it, and then you want to do it, and you don't have that struggle anymore? Because now you're in a different zone. So affect your different zone. Now I want to do it. That itself is the greatest reward of a mitzvah that you can experience in this world. That you're enjoying doing the mitzvahs. And then of course, yes, then those incredible rewards in the next world, that'll be in the next world. But the Torah is telling you exactly what the reward, mamish, here, the reward here is that I will enjoy my Judaism. We have too many Jews who are doing their Judaism. They don't enjoy it. They're just doing it because you have to. And you're raising a generation of children who see that you don't enjoy it, and they're not going to want to do it. So where do you get that excitement to do the mitzvah? Not if it came to you on a silver platter. Anything that comes easy, it's not going to be something that's going to be solid. If it came hard, then you want to do the mitzvah. You worked hard to get it. And that's why for a certain time, a Baal Tshuva really likes doing mitzvahs better than the FFB. For a certain amount of time, because they had to struggle for it. They had to struggle hard. They had to work hard to develop an attitude of looking at things in a religious way. And therefore, you might find a tremendous desire for them to do all the mitzvahs. And then something very unusual happens somewhere down the line. It could be a year, two, three, five, 8 years down the line. All of a sudden, they don't want to do it anymore. You know why? Because they said, Rabbi Michalowicz keeps on pushing us. Just when I thought I understood it, he's telling me another hard thing I got to do. He's making me think about, I just thought Judaism was a nice, friendly, user-friendly religion. And now the rabbi said, no, you got to really take it a step deeper and a step deeper. He keeps working me hard. You know why he keeps working you hard? Because if you keep working hard, you're going to keep liking it. That's the Hulk. But when all of a sudden, well, now you're here, now you go on cruise control. What's going on cruise control? And it's not hard anymore? You don't want to do it anymore. And you find this, and you can't argue on this. This is a statistical fact. If you follow Baal Tshuvas or Frum people, it's the same thing. The ones that keep schwitzing and toiling over their Torah, they keep enjoying their Torah. You know, and that's why you become Baal Tshuva, good, and I keep looking at my art school my whole life. You keep looking at your art school your whole life, eventually you don't want to do the mitzvahs anymore. You know, this minyan goes too slow. We need a faster minyan. Because all of a sudden, you know, Shabbos is ending too late. We gotta end it on time. It's early, the most lenient opinion. What happened? What happened to all that excitement of, you know, I don't have to give that much tzedakah. What happened to all that shuwat? Because you wanted everything to be easy. That rabbi makes it so much easier. So let me go there. I'm not saying he's a bad rabbi, but he's not feeding you what you need. You need process. Process never ends. Never ends. Process never, ever ends. When it becomes easy, you have to start making it hard. So now you did the mitzvahs. Okay. So now start learning how to read Hebrew. Oh, that's going to be hard. Yep. That's going to be hard. I'm going to break my teeth. Yep. That's what you have to do. But when you break your teeth and you learn how to read Hebrew, then you're going to want to daven. You're going to want to daven. You know, just look at the English. You're not going to want to daven, just look at the English. It's too easy. It came easy, and you're not going to want to keep it. You broke your teeth to understand the Hebrew words. And now I have to know what the Hebrew words mean. I have to know what the translations mean. And now you're telling me, Rabbi, there's 7 different ways to conjugate a verb. Yeah. But when you finish doing that, and you know it, then you know it. And then you're always going to pray slowly, and you're going to enjoy it. That's the difference. And then Rabbi says, it's time you started learning Talmud. Talmud, it's written in Aramaic. So, that's really hard. So, and you start reading that. And I'm telling you, the people who keep taking the next thing and are breaking their heads, those are the ones that keep on what? Doing the mitzvahs. Once you say, I don't have to break my head anymore, in the secular world, the whole idea is you work hard, then to coast. I went to medical school, I did this, I did my training, I did all this. Now I just do the same thing over the rest of my life and get a lot of money for doing that. And they end up being very unhappy people. You got to keep on taking the next challenge. Now, in the secular world, there's only so much challenge you could do at work. But in Torah, the challenges are never over. As soon as you've mastered an area, I'll introduce a whole area that you're totally ill-equipped, and you're at the bottom of the pole, and you're going to have to work your head off again, over and over. You know, what do kids graduate university saying? Baruch Hashem, I'm never going to have to work hard again. It's this whole idea of hating the work to get to a place where you don't have to work. You know, in this world, God doesn't need you to be in this world to relax. There's nothing to be gained by relax. Okay, you have a little relax. You worked hard, you need to take a break for a few days, fine. But now for the next 25 years, I've got it made. That's not the way life was meant to be lived. And if you're working hard at these things, so it comes out, the person who is Omo Batara, it pulls a person out of the physical realm and pulls them into a spiritual sphere. When you're learning Torah, Torah is all spiritual. The Zohar says the Torah and Hashem are one. What Hashem thinks is what He is. That's a hard concept. What He thinks is what He is. And that means when you learn Chumash, that's what God is. When you're learning Talmud, that's what God is. The more you learn about God, you're in a spiritual environment. Reading this Sefer is a spiritual zone. Pondering hours deeply, getting lost in the sea of the Talmud is lost in God's zone. You're enveloped in a spiritual aura. So then when you're in that aura, then it's logical to go and do a mitzvah. But if I'm sitting back and I'm sipping on my pina colada on a Chase lounge chair and I'm looking at the English translation of the Mishnayos here, oh, it's so interesting, I find this very interesting, you're still in a physical zone. You haven't gotten into a spiritual zone yet. You're still a physical person. Physical person doesn't relate to spirituality. So what's this Shabbos business? What's this Shabbos business? Okay, it says I'm going to go to hell if I don't keep Shabbos. Okay, I don't want to go to hell. I'll keep Shabbos. But please, the minimum. Please, I'll sleep the whole Shabbos. That's too much. Whatever you ask is too much. All right, got to do that too. Okay, got to do that too. All right, but to really do it, because you're not in the spiritual zone. So once you get in that spiritual zone, he'll want to learn about the mitzvahs, he'll want to understand the mitzvahs, he'll perform the mitzvahs. So now this reward is that you want to do it. And that's the most amazing thing that comes in this world. And that is a chok. That itself, people don't get it. They don't want to do it. It doesn't sit according to my normal mental reasonings. So the Medrash goes on and says, well, now we go to some of the examples. I don't have time to go through all of them. It's running late. But David HaMelech, he was planning to go here, to go there. At the end of the day, I end up what? Going to the shul. I always end up doing mitzvahs. Well, he's going on this pasuk, Im b'chukosai teilechu. If you work hard at understanding Torah, that will make you naturally gravitate to spiritual performance. Now, I may have had all kinds of physical plans in my head, but because of the fact that I plug away at Torah and I throw myself in a spiritual environment, that creates that I naturally gravitate to spiritual realms. And it's basically giving me a second nature now. I just go to spiritual things. That's all there is to it. Even though there might be other things on the agenda, it doesn't interest me. I'm going back to the spiritual. That's the unique quality of toiling in Torah. It takes a person out of physical realm, pushes them into the spiritual realm, in which mitzvahs and understanding them only then become enjoyable. That's the simple step. It's transforming a physical being into a spiritual being. That can only happen through working hard at Torah. The second rabbi says that working spiritually, toiling in Torah is the next thing. I considered a mitzvah, the benefit of a mitzvah versus the loss of an avera. What does that mean? It means I'm considering, you know, every time you do a mitzvah, it means you get close to Hashem. Every time you do a avera, it distances you from Hashem. And the guy's already a spiritual being. He understands that. I want to do the things that bring me close to Hashem. But even though he says, I consider all those things, but at the end of the day, you know why I'm doing it? You know, it's a very interesting thing. You know, a person can be spiritually narcissistic too, you know. What do I mean? Narcissism means I do things for my own pleasure. So what if you're very sophisticated? So you have more sophisticated pleasures. What if you're so sophisticated, you know that spirituality is the greatest pleasure in the world? And you know that a moment in the world to come is better than all the physical pleasure in this world. So what if you're just a clever narcissist? And you say, you know what? I decide to be religious. You why? Because I'm going to get the best pleasure one day when I'm up there. And I always want to have the best pleasure. And that's going to be the best pleasure. Now that's wonderful. We can even call you a tzaddik, but you're a tzaddik who's narcissistic. So what David HaMelech is saying is that, you know, if you go in the statutes, mean to say you toil in Torah, even if you are a spiritual person, but when you hook into doing the mitzvahs, you're not even going to do it because you want to get to the world to come. You just do it. Why? Because it's the will of God. And this is what we call l'shem shamayim, doing things just for the sake of God, for no benefit to yourself at all, which is one of the highest levels a person can reach. Not only the first step does it take you out of the physical realm, and instead of wanting to go to the movie theater, you want to go to hear Rabbi Reisman give it. You know, what do you do on a Saturday night? We can go Saturday night at the movies or hear a videotape of Rabbi Reisman at 10:30. You know what? We're planning on going to see the new Yogi Bear movie, Ich Weiß This, and now we decided to go to Rabbi Reisman. Why? Because I naturally want to go to the spiritual places because I'm a spiritual being. But the second rabbi say, not only are you a spiritual being, but you're a spiritual being, not even considering you're being spiritual because of the benefits that come to you. You don't even care about the benefits. You'll do it even if you wouldn't get any olam haba, you would do it. That's doing things just for the sake of doing them. That's a whole extra benefit. These are benefits that come out of it. You become a truer person in your relationship with Hashem. I don't have time to get all. And the last one, saying you could change the blessings to curses. It's the whole idea that tshuva makes all the averis, you know, turns them into mitzvahs. That the person who's supposed to get all the curses, that you did a lot of bad things and you're supposed to get a lot of curses, what happens is if you toil very hard, it could change them and turn them all into blessings. So that is the benefits that you have. And that's what the first, okay, hold on. So that's, we hear all the benefits that are going on over here. And this is where Torah wisdom is distinguished from any other wisdom in the world. This is where it just doesn't work. Any other wisdom, just read the book, get tested on, and you're finished. In Torah, it's not getting tested on, and you're finished. It's important. You got to know what you learned, but how much time you put into it, right? Because what's really going on in the process is turning you in from a physical being to a spiritual being as well. And therefore, you have the ability to transform all the negative elements of the human and direct them into a proper direction. That's what Amelus and Torah is all about. That's what it accomplishes. So now, again, it's you can't explain this. It's just like it's hard to explain love to people who have never loved. You can't explain the transformation to a person who works hard in Torah unless you've been a person who worked hard in Torah. You just can't appreciate it. But we'll still try to give you a little bit of a psychological reason. So, you know, just like we know we don't know the real reason for shatness, but we can give you some ideas, but we know it's not the real reason. So I'm going to try to do the same thing in the next 5 minutes. Give you at least to let your brain psychologically be happy to go to sleep at night with it. Even though whatever I'm telling you isn't close to really what's going on, because that's a hoax. So I told you what I'm going to explain to you is what you're not going to like. You're going to walk out of this room, you're going to struggle with that idea. That's good. Now struggle on this idea for hours and hours and hours, and that'll be the chok. That'll be your omo. You know, the rabbi gave a class. I heard what he said. It was very interesting. It doesn't make any sense. I'm trying to understand the sense of it. And now you're going to ask more questions and this and that. You know, most classes, you know, like if I give a class and you don't have any questions, I'm okay, the format of this class doesn't lend itself to it because unless you want to stay here for 4 hours. But if you walk out of this class and you don't have one question on your mind, then there's a major problem. It means I'm a lousy teacher and or you just weren't paying any attention. What do I mean? No, let me change that. You weren't working hard to understand the class. Everyone says, yes, Rabbi, yes, Rabbi, yes, Rabbi. You know, but if you're asking me a million questions, you know, this doesn't make sense, and this doesn't make sense, and that doesn't make sense, and I disagree with this, and not just from stupidity, but from saying, you know, it's not logical. I can bring you studies of this and that, but you told us something 3 weeks ago that's the opposite of this and this. So now you're thinking, you're working hard. And then after you come home, you analyze the class, you send me an email, I have 7 questions on what you had to do, and then I respond to you, and then you have 5 more questions, I respond to you, this and that, and then, now you've been learning. Now you've been learning. If you just say, yeah, it's fun, that's good, that's fine, that's good, that's good, that's good, that's good, that's good. See, so then I failed. So really, okay, it's really the best way, you know, but you do have to have information. You have to be able to get the information. If I don't give you any information, then no process is going on here. But you know, it gets to a point where we're going to say, okay, now I'm going to give you some information and work on it on your own. You have to be able to have students that you can trust that will work on their own. A lot of them say, well, I got other things to do. I got to go somewhere else. I'm not going to get back to it. But, you know, so what I'm saying is the fact I'm giving classes like this is not the ultimate goal. These classes are to get you to think and to get you to say, hey, you know, these are ideas I wouldn't have heard about. Ultimately, and especially for men, ultimately, they got to sit down in front of a Gemara with another person and knock your brain over it. And for ladies, there's other things you can knock your brains over. And it's not just in learning. It's issues with emunah, bitachon. There's a lot of bitachon issues, trust issues that we don't understand. And to discuss these issues. And for some, it's accepting these things and asking questions. But you have a lot of questions, but I still am going to try to understand why the rabbi said I shouldn't speak Lashon about this person, even though it would make a lot of sense for me to speak Lashon about this person. So there's a lot of chum that are involved here. But let's try to give a little bit of psychology over here. If a person says to himself, now you have different kinds of people around. The person says, you know, I find this information hard. I find it challenging. But I have a trust in God that there's a lot more behind this than what I see at first blush. And I'll admit my inability to understand this instantly. If a person can say that, what have they accomplished? What they did is they destroyed a lot of ego that they have, which is very necessary for spiritual development. One of the most important characteristics of spiritual development is humility. If you don't have humility, it's very hard to grow. If you start learning something and you read it and you say, I don't understand what's going on over here. Now, a lot of people say, I don't understand it, and therefore I'm not going to waste my time on it. That's how most people react to things, unless they really have to do it. For example, you want to get a promotion at work, you have to do this, you're not going to get a promotion. I'm going to do it, but I don't really want to do it. In Judaism, you know, it doesn't work that way. You don't like it, you can walk away, nobody knows the better. No one knows the difference. You come to something that, you know, I don't get it. Okay, I don't get it, that must not make any sense. Goodbye. I'm going to only learn the stuff that I get real easily. So what does that say about the Torah that you're learning? You know, it's only the part of the Torah that I agree with. You know, so then it's very limited as to what you're really doing over here. The ability for a person to humble himself to the intricacies of the Torah. And not only that, but now, and I'm going to put a lot of effort to try to understand what I don't understand. That opens up a person to the holiness of Torah. The very fact that you're going to spend hours over something that seems like archaic lunacy. And other people say, this is a mishigas, doesn't make any sense. And that's really what a lot of the quote unquote biblical scholars are, the secular biblical scholars. They just think the whole Torah doesn't make any sense. They spend their whole life trying to disprove it. Right? So, you know, so you can have a person who figures, listen, I'm going to learn, I'm going to investigate, I'm going to try to find my bearings, you know, philosophically, and I'll check, and I'll go whichever way I go, but I don't have to schwitz so hard over this stuff. This part I understand, that it's not so important. This part I understand, it's not so important. This is the easy part. I'll develop a Jewish philosophy from all the easy parts of Torah. Yeah? I'll find my own way. Yeah, you'll find your own way, you'll find your own religion. Judaism is not what you found. Right? And according to some opinions, that's what King David was contemplating. He was contemplating, maybe I don't have to work so hard at the Torah. And he says, no. At the end of the day, no, I got to work hard at it. And something that you work really hard at, and when you finally get it, you truly believe in it. If you know, who are the best proponents of Judaism? The ones who came to Judaism trying to disprove it. And they tried every which way to disprove it. And they were intellectually honest, and they found that every which way to disprove it, they were wrong, and Judaism is right. He is now the strongest advocate of Judaism. While the person who just was given Judaism didn't have to work for it, you ask him enough hard questions, he's not used to dealing with tough issues, yeah, it's not a problem, I guess I don't want to do it. In other words, the idea is, if you've trained your mind to intellectually work hard at something, then that trains your body to work hard at something too. If your mind is not going to take things that's difficult, why should your body? And when your mind is working hard in God's Torah, you're swimming in a spiritual swimming pool. And you're coming out spiritual. If you're looking at this Torah, it's not hard. And a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit of my own common sense, then it's not really spirituality. It's not what you're into. You could take the Torah and make it very physical. You can make it very physical and take all the spirituality out of Torah. You could take kashrus, right? You go kashrus, right? And you're going to be kosher and eat like a glutton. Okay, but everything's kosher. So how spiritual was your activity? Right? You're learning kashrus. You have to understand what's behind kashrus. There's a lot of questions. And you spiritually brought in the concept of kashrus. So now you're a spiritual person who not only keeping kashrus, but you don't eat like a pig. You know, and then you don't have these issues where so to speak, a kosher ice cream store is opening up somewhere, but it doesn't have hashkacha all the time. But what could be so bad about it? Because after all, there's some COR products that are kosher there. So let me go eat there. You know, and if I can't, oh, Judaism's terrible. It's because you haven't worked hard at your Yiddishkeit once in your life. If you'd work hard for something, you appreciate it. And you're in a spiritual zone, and then all those benefits will come out of a person. Okay, now I ask, is this making any sense? Does anybody have anything to ask?
It's like you study algebra. Why do you want to study trigonometry? If you haven't got any use in your life to apply it, it's useless. To study algebra is studying Torah to adapt to your own personal intelligence, your lifestyle, whatever.
That's the problem.
That is the problem.
That's the problem. In other words, if you learn Torah for your, very well put, if you learn Torah for your utility, then you've taken Torah and put it into your physical world. You have to learn Torah, say, listen, this is the ultimate experience that you could have of knowledge and of God. You're trying to, as we've said in other classes, the only reason you learn Torah is to understand God. That's the only reason you're learning Torah, is to understand God and also to understand what the godly part of a human being is made up of. That's what all of Torah, and boiling it down to the simplest thing, is to understand that. And that's something that has to be only understood in a spiritual zone. And that can only be understood with the spiritual tools that are there. And it needs a tremendous amount of humility. To be humble enough to say, this is really hard, and God says it's important, so even though I don't know if that's that important, I will work really hard to get to that point. And I'll ask questions. You don't have to be easy. You don't have to say, well, I agree to everything you say. Adarab, you ask a lot of questions. The more questions, the better. You find it hard, good. And the harder you're working at it, the more you are getting into a spiritual zone by disrobing your arrogance and humbly getting into a spiritual zone that permeates your whole existence. Right? Yeah?
How would you define hard learning? Because what's hard for one person...
Okay, it's a good question. Whatever is beyond the zone of... Whatever provides the student with a healthy disequilibrium. And that's the best answer I can give you.
A healthy
disequilibrium.
For one person, learning.
Everyone's different.
With someone else is enjoyable. It's like they love the banter and the back and forth. For another person, getting up early in the morning to do the fiomi is very hard.
Right.
For other people, it's easy to just sit back there.
Again, no matter what you learn, we're not saying that Torah learning has to be painful. We're saying it has to be hard work. Don't make a mistake. We're not saying you have to be crying the whole time you're learning. You have to say, it's got to be something that you have to exert every brain muscle to get it. Right? And you can't be lazy. That's what it's saying. Now, it can be enjoyable, and it should be enjoyable. It should get to the point where you enjoy the struggle. You enjoy the process. But it's got to be a process. It can't be, I start to learn, and I get it right away. Everything I learn, I get right away. Then you're not going to grow in there. You got to learn something that's harder. You know, you find with children, you could see, you know, certain kids where certain things come easy to them. All of a sudden they get something that's not easy and they become failures. You look at, let's say a kid who can read really well. He's the top kid in the class, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. And then all of a sudden, math. Done. Let's say a kid's good at math and even good at reading, but not good at, processing, the oral processing. You know where he gets caught when he catch a kid? Story problems. Story problems in math. The kid's good at math. The kid's good at reading. Why is he failing math now? Story problems. Because now he has to learn how to read the words and understand what he's reading and apply it to math. But that's hard work. But you've got to do that kind of hard work. So what comes, you can't just learn things that come, it's easy. I get the answers right away. You can enjoy the banter, but you have to realize, I don't know. After learning it for 10 minutes, I don't understand it. And after 20 minutes, I don't understand it. After an hour, I get it. You know? And you'll find the way Gemara is designed, it's specifically designed that way. If you ask any educator, a secular educator, to devise the Talmud, they would never have written it the way the Talmud is written. It's written, the first page is written, assuming you know the next 80 pages. Why'd you write it like that? Because it's not supposed to be easy. You got to read it. I don't get it. Keep going. And I don't get this. That's fine. Just keep going. Keep going. Until you finish the whole book. Oh, I'm getting to get some of this. Now, review the whole book again. And a second. And a third. And a fourth. And a fifth time. And then you're going to get it. You know why? Because that's the way life is too. The problem is, if you don't learn this way, there's a physical way of living your life, there's a spiritual way of living your life. You can be married to somebody all your life, you still don't know who they are. Because you look at that person for everything that's easy. Yeah, well, we like that. We have many common interests. We like Italian cuisine, and we like the color red, and we like to work out, and it's great. But anything deep to the other person, you've never bothered. But then all of a sudden, when the other spouse says something that's philosophical given to you, you know, let's just not talk about that. They were having such a good time. Let's not talk about this. And the real person that you're married to, you don't even know who they are. Because, you know, they happen to have a philosophy more of this, and your philosophy more of that, and that starts to grind on each other. Let's just keep religion out of this. Let's keep, you know, we have a good marriage. We try to really avoid anything in depth with each other, and that's how our marriage stays good. You know, because if you really start getting into the kishkas of another person, you got to work hard. But the benefit is you really know that person at the end of the day. And then after years pass, and when the commonality of simplicity isn't so pleasurable anymore because your nice, darling, sexy wife is on an old bag and the secretary is much more beautiful, then all of a sudden you have some other ideas in your mind. Because I never really married this person. I just married this external thing when external things can come and go. But if you are part of that person, that takes a good marriage takes b'chukosai telecha. You got to work your head off. You got to sweat. You think you understand the parsha of your wife? You don't understand the parsha of your wife. And even when you think you understand it, she throws in five more questions you don't understand now. You know, everybody says before they get married, they understand the Ten Commandments of marriage. They know all the rules of marriage. You ever laugh when you go to these Sheva Brachas where the guy's best friends tell him ideas about marriage and he never got married? You know, he goes, start learning the chukas of marriage. That's a mitzvah. Marriage is a mitzvah too. And it's a lot of chukam to it. And you gotta work very hard to understand the next person. The Torah is just a microcosm of life. The Torah is a micro. God created the world from the Torah. So if the Torah is complicated, the world has to be complicated. You want to be able to get through complicated things in life? You got to work hard at it. Any relationship that doesn't take hard work is not a relationship. Let me reframe that. It's not a Jewish relation. It's not a Jewish marriage. A Jewish marriage has to be complicated by nature because each partner has a body and a soul. That already complicates things tremendously. And what you think is a soul, you better work hard on understanding what a soul is. Soul has 10 different spheros. You have to analyze the 10 spheros and how much of this does everybody have in their sphera and how this meshes with the other one. It's a complicated thing. Living with people is very complicated. Right? But it's meant to work hard, get it, be humble enough to realize you don't get it. And then you get into a spiritual zone and then you can deal with that person that's over there. So that, and the benefits are like incredible. The benefits are incredible. How often, you know, do we have people that are knowledgeable in Torah, but have trouble in translating into action? How do we have people that no matter how much information you give them, they're always still not sure? You have people like that. The answer is because they haven't worked hard at assimilating their Torah knowledge that they're being brought to them. They haven't been able to make that jump to the next point. And that's what you're wondering. I don't know. I'm learning this the whole time, and it's still, I don't really, not sure if I should do this. You know why? Because you haven't really worked hard at it. You really haven't asked enough questions, haven't really delved deep enough to say, you know, till I really get it. And then when you really get it, you really got it. So this is the Chok. So as we leave this class, you're going to walk away a little bit. I don't know. Is that? This is something you got to hear the tape a few times, hear other classes that talk about it. But that's clearly what God meant. We'll just end with that pasuk. Where is that pasuk? I think it's the last source. Yeah. King David says in Psalms, Torah Hashem Tamima, Meshivas Nafesh. The Torah of Hashem is perfect. It restores the soul. Eidus Hashem Nemona Machkimas Pesi. A testimony of Hashem is trustworthy, making the simple one wise. So the Shem Yishol asks, you tell me that Torah is a testimony, right? The Torah is a testimony. Well, there's certain laws in being a witness. In being a witness, there are certain laws. You know, if you go to a Jewish court and you write your testimony and hand it in, is it accepted in Jewish law? You write what you saw. I wrote what I saw. You wrote it. Is it testimony? Not at all. It's not accepted at all. What if Moshe Rabbeinu told you something that happened, and you go to court and said, Moshe Rabbeinu told me this happened, is it accepted in Jewish court law? What if something really did happen? It really did happen, but you didn't see it, but you said it happened. Is it admissible? It's also not admissible. You have to have seen it, you have to have known it, and you have to express it. So there's a very simple question. How can you call the Torah a testimony when the Torah is just written down? How is the Torah a testimony if it's not written down? Right? The answer is, Torah is only a testimony when a Jew who learns it, lives it, and expresses it, and speaks it, then that's a testimony to what the Torah is all about. When the Jew says the Torah and lives by the Torah, then that's a testimony to what Torah is about. And lives a spiritual life, that's the biggest testimony to the Torah. Having this over here alone is not accepted in a court of law. That's not accepted in a court of law. When a Jew lives by it, then it's a Torah Hashem Tamima, it revives the soul, then it's an Eidus Hashem. That's a testimony to Hashem. Because you don't have to act, if he works hard at it, you don't say, well, what are you talking about? Guy says to you, what do you mean when you say this, Rabbi? So I say, what do you mean? I saw it. I know it's 100% true. There's no question in my mind. I'm a living testimony to it. Let me just end with a story. An incredible story I just saw yesterday. There was this fellow, I forgot which yeshiva it was. Details, I'm never good at remembering details. It was in the Vardic. Navardik was one of these yeshivas, very big Musar yeshiva in Europe. So there was a bachur getting married, and one of the rabbis from Navardik, so the wedding day, so the young groom says to the rabbi, Rabbi, can you give me some final advice before I go on my adventure of life and marriage? So he said, well, I just want you to know, you know, the most important thing in life is not necessarily, you know, what kind of girl you have and what kind of marriage you're going to have. Most important thing in life is not necessarily what kind of parnassah you're going to make, although they're both very helpful. But the most important thing in life is going to be how much you cling to God through the Torah that you learn. That is the key to all your life. If you can cling to God through the Torah that you learn, then you have the secret to everything in life. And then everything else will fall into place. That's why I remember my Rosh Hashiva before I got married. He kept pulling me aside. He said in Yiddish, Joseph, he says, whatever's going to happen, you have this, that, you have to promise, you're going to do, now, one day in your life will never pass that you haven't learned 1 hour of Torah that day. You think it's an easy promise to make. It's not. That means even the day your wife is in the delivery room giving birth to children, you still have to learn Torah an hour that day. Even when you got a lot of business going, you still got to learn Torah an hour every day. He says, that's the key to your success in life. That's all. That's all he's telling me. So, and then he told us, oh, of course, you know, the chassan hears that. He said, you know, he says, now let me tell you a story that happened in Navardik. So it was one day where, this is when the communism was really strong. Really, really strong. So, communists said one of the things, you can't learn Torah. But to be a yeshiva learning Torah, they kill everybody on the spot. No questions asked. So the communists made a big, symposium, whatever. Everyone got together in a big building that was right across the street from the Navardic yeshiva. Now remember, this is before you have multi-communications. The whole Navardic yeshiva, they're sitting in Navardic. What's Navardic, this two-bit town? right? And there's a learning there. The communists don't know about it. But now they're making a big meeting, and it's right across the street. So some of the administrators thought, you know, maybe it'd be a good idea to cancel school this day. Why? We're under risk. Just cancel school. Tell all the boys, don't show your face. Don't learn. Just take a day off. So Rosh Yeshiva said, nothing doing. We're keeping the schedule as normal. Everything's going to be the same. I promise you, nothing will happen to you if you learn things normal. So it is. They're learning. They're in the base medrash. They're learning. And there's guards. Lots of guards looking around. Are there any Jews learning Torah anywhere? So a couple guards go, oh, they're hearing noises in the street. They're hearing noises from this building. So they go to the building. And they open up the yeshiva doors. And what do they see? If you've ever been in a yeshiva where there's 100, 200 boys learning Torah, it's a cacophony of noise with all these gestures. And they're going, what are you talking about? It's like this, no, it's not, blah, 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 blah. And it's all in the Yiddish, right? And they're acting like, so the soldier says, this is an insane asylum. And Russian law was very strict. You cannot hurt any insane people. They're the law. You cannot hurt insane people. This is not a Torah institute, this is an insane asylum. Insane asylum? They close the door, let the Michigan be there. I forgot to mention one part of the story. Just before the soldiers came, there were two Bachim who were afraid to stay in the yeshiva, so they went to the dorm, to hide in the dorm. So they said, there's no only crazy one in this room. Let's go to this building, which is the dorm. And by then, they thought, the Bachim thought the coast was clear. The two Bachim come out, on the spot, they get shot dead. I want to ask you, does that make sense? This is also Chukas HaTorah. This is a Chok of the Torah. This is a law that your little feeble minds are not going to understand. If you are learning Torah the way, with hard effort like in yeshiva, then you're going to be in a spiritual zone, and you're going to, and the greatest blessing, I don't know for you, for me, the biggest challenge is to every day to love to do a mitzvah. To just love it. Because Hashem always makes sure to give you mitzvahs that are so hard to love to do. He puts you next to people that are so hard to want to be nice to because they hurt you so much. Right? God will never make it easy. But the greatest challenge is to be able to love to do the mitzvahs. To want to do the mitzvahs. And the Torah is saying, you want to love to do the mitzvahs? You got to work hard at learning it. You got to work hard at learning it. Then you're going to see you're in a spiritual, humbling, spiritual zone where you're going to love everything that's there. I don't buy it because it's a chok. But the results are there. The fact is those who work hard for it, enjoy it. The ones who don't. And that's a fact. And that's the ultimate blessings. And that's why, unfortunately, we then go to the terrible, terrible destructions that happen. How can we stop such destruction? Well, maybe it's because Jews didn't this. Maybe it's only for one reason. Jews didn't want to work hard at their Judaism. And then it's a slippery slope all the way down. So Hashem should bless us that we should in this week be invaded. And this week's parsha, we start tonight. The fifth week of Sfira is what Mida? Is Hod. Hod. And Hod is humility. And that's why Lag Bomer, which is in five days, we know Rabbi Akiva's students all died during this time. Because as hard as they worked, there were certain areas maybe they could have worked a little harder in. On their level. They didn't work hard enough. Right? But it all stopped on Lag Bomer, because Lag Bomer is the 33rd day. It's the meat of Hod, humility of humility. To be able to learn certain lessons, you got to work hard and be very humble to work hard at understanding something. When you have that humility, then the destruction can stop. So it's no coincidence. It all fits into these parshas. You're coming up to Shavuos. You want to get the Torah. You want to get the Torah. You think the Jews got the Torah. They came out of Egypt. Boom, they got the Torah. They had to work really hard to get the Torah. It's not a question of getting the Torah. It's not a question of learning the Torah. It's wanting to do it and loving doing it. That's what we're losing in a generation where we've almost lost it. Our kids do not love doing Yiddishkeit anymore. You know why? Because they don't see their parents working too hard at it either. And their parents haven't pushed their kids to work too hard at it. This attitude, we can't stress them out. I'm not saying you have to be careful about it, but to not stress them out at all, then that's what you get. You get, you raise children who just don't care about Yiddishkeit at all. So it's hard to create that balance, to show the love for the child, show importance to learn. And if it's hard, then maybe the father should say, maybe, you know, it's hard for me too. Let's both work on it hard together. Then you'll see some brachas. Hashem should bless us that we should be able to chokosai telechu and find that all our paths take us to good places. Okay.
Thank you. I just want to ask you, Sam, it was like for Omer, Jakey and Hila want to know the haircuts and shaving.
Friday morning.
Friday morning.
Till Shabbos.
And then from then on again, you can't again until Shabbos.
Did they start from the beginning?
Yeah, right.
Then that's it. They're done.
They're done. So, okay. So Friday morning, that's it.
That's it. And they can listen to music on Sunday.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.